The Mormon Channel welcomes you to this special edition episode of Conversations. The Mormon Channel is a media outlet of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This episode of Conversations features an interview with Rick Stevenson, the producer and director of the 5,000 Days Project. The first film to come from this extensive project is Two Brothers, which documents the lives and changing attitudes of two young Latter-day Saint brothers using video documentation and interviews done at regular intervals over an 11-year period. The host for this interview is Ruth Todd. Ruth is a former television news anchor as well as a radio and television personality.
Welcome to a special edition of Conversations on the Mormon Channel. I'm your host, Ruth Todd, and it is our pleasure today to welcome Rick Stevenson, filmmaker, producer, and director of the 5,000 Days Project. Rick is from the Seattle area and known for his work in both film and television in the U.S., Canada, and Great Britain. He holds a Ph.D. from Oxford University in England, a master's degree from the London School of Economics, and a bachelor's from Whitman College in Washington State. Rick is married with four children, and what a resume. What a pleasure to have you on Conversations today.
It is an honor to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so before we get to the 5,000 Days Project, you know, you look at this and you say, all right, you were getting a Ph.D. in economics and going to the London School of Economics, so you're over there in Britain at arguably the top institution in the world. Did you know that you would be a filmmaker at that time? Tell me a little bit about your journey from Washington State to England, back to Washington State.
Well, my parents were teachers, and so I was raised with a priority of service, and I wanted to go into the Foreign Service and work abroad, represent the country. And I got to Oxford and started watching a lot of movies, and I got the bug, and it was all over. Now, what was really interesting was that in between losing the fascination of the Foreign Service and wanting to become a filmmaker, I did go through a brief period of time where I wanted to go into television journalism. This was the time when Peter Jennings was at ABC News in London. So I wrote to Peter, and I said, could I come be your intern? And he said, absolutely. You know, he wrote back, invited me.
I remember he was at the London Bureau. He was the bureau chief there.
That's right. And this was at the time when Rhodesia was becoming Zimbabwe. And he had me do a huge research project on it. So we're on the lineup that evening with New York, which is 5 hours before, where they decide what stories are going to go on the air. And something had just come across the AP wires about Mugabe, who at that time was a good guy, appointing the Reverend Canaan Banana to be the president of Zimbabwe. And so I pushed the wire in front of Peter, and he says, oh, no, I'd also like to do the story on President Banana. And something else comes up, and they discuss it. And so I pushed the paper in front of Peter again. And he says, I want to do the story on President Banana. And there's silence on the other end from the producers in New York. And they say, well, what are you talking about? And Peter says, Mugabe just appointed the President Canaan Banana, you know, to that post. Silence again. We can't say that on the news. Why not? Banana? It'll hurt our credibility. And that story never got on ABC News because his name was Banana. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to do something superficial, I might as well go into the movies.
But you kind of knew somewhere along the way that that was really your pathway.
You talk to anybody that's in the media, and they got the bug at some stage. And I got the movie bug, and I knew I had to explore it and see if there was a chance before I abandoned it. And it just happened to work out for me.
It sure did. So you've had some good success with movies and television and lots of things. Is the idea for the 5,000 Days Project percolating yet? How does that come about?
Well, several years ago, I saw something on the BBC called the 7-Up series. It was started in 1962, and they took a group of 7-year-olds and decided to cover them every 7 years. So it's 7, 14, 21, 28. I think they've done 49. But anyway, it was an intriguing idea, and some of the episodes have been very intriguing. But I was always a little disappointed. The questions were a little distant and British. And the fact they only covered them every 7 years, you didn't really understand why they changed. So I thought there's a great idea for a longitudinal documentary here, but it needs to be done where you shoot interviews with kids every year and in that way create a time-lapse photography where you actually see the rose blooming.
Totally.
And so I got very excited about that concept. I went to our local school district and I said, you guys up for this? I'd happily do it, you know, as a volunteer project. And they sent me 800 students that they thought, I think I figured it was one out of every 12 in the district. That
So it's safe to say they were on board with the project.
They were very enthusiastic about it. And anyway, we interviewed them all and ended up with 60. So from early 2001, I was covering 60 kids, and the project has now grown to be in six countries and has 200 kids, and that's going to double this year.
Wow. So tell our listeners, when you say it started that way, it's grown. So you get these kids, and what?
Well, this started out to be simply a documentary where I would interview a child once a year between the ages of, say, 8 and 18. And we'd collect some B-roll on them playing in the orchestra or whatever, and then we'd find a story, mm-hmm. the child's story, mm-hmm. and put it together. And maybe one out of five stories we'd edit together. But the good thing, the promise to the child and to the parents, was they have this incredible time capsule of their children growing up. But the requirement for me was that the child wanted to come in and talk openly, and everything that was said would be said privately between the child and myself. So they had a right to say anything in that, and that footage would be completely private until such time as if we wanted to use it in a story, we would come back and get everybody's approval to do it. And they had the complete right to say no, though nobody has said that.
What was unique about the 60 you chose? If you interviewed 800 kids, what were you looking for?
I think a willingness to be completely open, to be honest. Have a unique point of view of the world. Somebody comes in and tells me what they think I want to hear. I had no interest.
And you could
all.
Pretty much tell that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I wanted people that were just telling the truth. And what's been exciting about the project is about 2 or 3 years in, what started out just to be a documentary project became something else because teachers, as we would show some of these clips, started noticing first above everybody that there was a huge educational component to being involved in the 5,000 Days Project, that the kids that were going through it, that were answering these fairly intense set of questions once a year, were actually getting to know themselves much better at a point in their lives when kids are probably least reflective.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
let me interrupt you there for 1 second and ask you, what types of questions are you talking about? I'm thinking of all the parents out there listening to this. Mm-hmm. What kinds of questions did you ask these kids that parents can ask their children so children can get to know themselves earlier in the game than most kids?
Well, the core issues are what are your longings and what are your fears? So questions as basic as three wishes.
Right.
And what are you most afraid of? And everything kind of – because we're motivated by those two things. And I think all of us live somewhere on the spectrum between fear and longing. And if we operate more on the longing side, we have one type of life. And if we operate more on the fear side, and we know people that live on all parts of that spectrum, you know, then that dictates the sort of life we live. But what was so interesting about this age is that, you know, especially as they get to be 11 and 12, 13, 14, and you get this sort of crazy cocktail mix of hormones mm-hmm. and the mysterious emotions that attack you when you're 12, 13, and 14, and you don't understand what's happening to you. We're making huge decisions at this age in this society, and yet we're doing it blindly.
Not sure who we are yet.
Yeah. And so what we found is that kids that went through the process and are going through the process, instead of being victimized by these mysteries, are becoming masters of them and getting to know themselves well enough to make better choices.
So maybe have a more active role in determining where they are on that spectrum or where their path is leading.
Becoming the actor versus the victim.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you started out with these 60 kids and – Two Brothers is the first film that's come out of this 5,000 Days project, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so tell us about Two Brothers.
Well, two of those children were brothers that had a bit of a conflict between them.
You understand that conflict before you actually started filming? Did you pick them independently of one another as you went through the 800, or did you pick them because they were brothers?
I picked them because they were my nephews.
Well, there you go.
There was pure nepotism involved. In fact, all of my nephews and nieces are involved in this project. It's sort of like our family's a family of orthodontists and dentists and architects and things like this. And so we all exchanged these services. We reported to the IRS, I want to point out. But
you picked these two boys, and there's a conflict. So you must have known that there was somewhat of a conflict. And how old were they when they started?
Well, we started, I think, Luke when he was 8 and Sam when he was 10. And I used to take them play basketball every Saturday and I football, and we did all sorts of great things together. And I noticed this conflict early on, and it wasn't anything extraordinary. It was a pretty typical conflict between
siblings. Rivalry.
But it was heartbreaking because, you know, here's the younger brother who just longs for the approval of the older brother, and the older brother doesn't really have time for him. And, you know, in the story, it ends up, you know, focusing a little bit on Sam as he goes into a period of what looks clearly was adolescent depression. But, you know, I also run a camp for the top filmmakers, young filmmakers in the world, and we sat around a campfire last summer. And out of that group of 20, I said, how many people have experienced some depression during that age? And 60% had. Now, how you define depression,
I don't
know. Is that
adolescence? Is it situational depression? What are the extraneous forces that are into play?
Is it a chemical depression? But anyway, you look at it, when that much mix of hormones and everything is happening in your body, you know, I remember going into huge periods of funk, you know, as a 13-year-old. And I think every mother can identify with that.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so you've got this film. It's called Two Brothers. Tell us about this project then, or this film.
Okay. Well, so it's sort of an unlikely first film because beyond that conflict, you don't look in Sam and Luke Nelson's life and think there's a huge story there. They are two very smart but pretty average Mormon kids that live in Seattle, so it's not a heavily Mormon society like it is here in Utah. They have phenomenal parents, come from a great family, and nothing's particularly wrong with their life. So that's not necessarily the meat, you know, of a great story. However, they do have a great story because their story is filled with questions like what do I believe? And then once they've decided what to believe, how do I maintain this belief? How do I maintain my standards in the face of peer pressure when 90% of my friends, because these are popular kids, popular good-looking kids, 90% of my friends are out drinking on Friday night. I have to sit home. I mean, they went through all of those issues. They experienced their degree of, you know, prejudice. They experience, and then, you know, Sam goes on his mission, and there's the fifth largest earthquake in history, and we don't hear from him for a week. You know, it's the movie is filled with drama that you would never assume would be a part of their story. I mean, I have kids that have gone through all forms of abuse, drug abuse, sexual abuse.
In your project, in
my project, in the 5,000 Days Project. Father issues and racial issues and whatever. Sam and Luke Hart, you know, really don't have any of those, but their story is so compelling because they're so honest about all the issues that they're facing.
So if someone's picking up this DVD and sees two brothers, give me a quick short clip. This story tells what and over what period of time?
This story tells a period of 11 years in the lives of these two brothers, starting at a point when they were in deep conflict. And shows how they came to love one another.
Mm-hmm. I think what's so fun about this story is that there's no makeup or change of wardrobe to show the aging of these boys, but you've gone back year after year, and so you actually, as you said, watch these kids bloom from little boys into men.
Yeah.
That's a fun journey.
Yeah.
So what did you learn and what did they learn that surprised you?
Overall in the project, I've learned that the real story is age 13 and 14.
Why so?
Because that's when kids decide who they're going to be. I also learned...
And this is across the board?
Across
the board. All those
60
kids that you talked to?
Across the board.
Okay.
I also learned that every kid, when they go through that period, goes through long sort of periods of feeling very alone, like they're the only one going through these crises because they are too old to, you know, sort of talk to their parents now, so they think, and too young to talk to each other. There's sort of this empty period right in between where they just feel very lonely. And the great thing about 5,000 Days Project and the number of stories we have coming out of it is that I think a child's going to be able to see any one of these stories and pick out issues in their own life and realize that these kids survived it, that they are not alone, that you can make it through as despite how bad it feels right now.
So you think as good as it is and was for you, it'll be actually better for these kids themselves to be able to watch their own coming of age, so to speak.
When Sam, Luke, and I watched it together, we just ended up sobbing. And it was a very cathartic experience because they saw a lot of stuff that, quite frankly, they'd pushed in the background and didn't even remember.
So it had been a lot of years
since
the time they saw
this
footage.
Realized how far they'd come.
They didn't really watch it as you were going along year to year.
No. I don't think that's good because I don't want to make people self-conscious.
Sure. You had some tremendous access as you were filming this story, Two Brothers, in places most people don't get to go. Tell us about that.
A lady named Geraldine Dreyfuss, who's a wonderful producer, has several films at Sundance every year. I was having lunch with a gentleman named John Garbett, who works here in the church department, media department. And you know, John was one of the executive producers on Other Side of Heaven, and he is – hugely experienced storyteller that's had a lot of experience, you know, at Disney. And he was saying, we want to reach outside the community for different points of view on the faith. Do you have any filmmakers in mind who share our values but are not LDS? And she said, I've got the perfect guy for you. And so she put John in touch with me, and John said, can I see some of your stuff? And I sent John a little 10-minute piece on Sam and Luke, and he was like, oh, my gosh, this is – we don't have this sort of material.
Well, especially from that vantage point either.
Exactly. And I think he also liked the very sort of raw, straightforward approach, which seems to be the direction the church is taking in its media with the I Am Mormon campaign, with instead of – worrying too much about the perfect polished image, they're saying that we're people and this is who we are. And that's definitely what Two Brothers is. It's very raw. They're very honest about their insecurities, about their problems. And it's a beautiful story as a result because I think we really connect with each other's vulnerabilities and our weaknesses, you know. So I think that was the beginning of it. And since then, when we were developing not only this movie, but a series with BYUB called Listen that will look at another 13 stories of kids.
Also from your 5,000 Days Project?
From the 5,000 Days Project, and that's meant to start in April.
So we're just getting rolling here.
Oh, just getting rolling.
When I talk about access, I was referring specifically to the fact that you were able to go not only in the Missionary Training Center in Provo, but actually you went down to Chile and followed Sam on his mission for a little bit, right?
And
tell us about both those experiences.
And to Cambodia with Luke now.
That's right.
That's not in the
– That's not in the
that's,
film.
That's
because,
not in this version of the film.
Right, exactly.
But no, I was given extraordinary access, and it was John who ended up going to the missionary department and saying, this is what Rick's doing, and he'd like to follow Sam on his mission, and is this something you could support? And yeah, great kudos to the – missionary department, they said yes. And they said, what else do you need? And I said, well, I'd love to come to the MTC. And they said, fine. And I said, I also like to do something you've never done before. I'd like to see if you'd allow Sam to keep a video diary while he's on his mission that just expresses all of the feelings that he has, because anybody that's been a missionary will know those first few months aren't pretty.
They're very difficult.
Very difficult. And to their credit, they said yes. I mean, they're very supportive and open about it. And I am so grateful for that trust. I was given a lot of trust.
So on that video diary, Sam was able to what? Take a video how often, and what was he supposed – what was the directive from you?
Well, what's interesting is I said just take it as often as you want. But what was funny was that a month into the video diary, he was told he couldn't keep it, not by the missionary department but by his mission president, because his Spanish-speaking companion saw that Sam would talk to this camera and get upset, like cry.
Said, this isn't good
said,
for him.
Said, this isn't good for him. And so the mission president was really thinking it was not a good thing. And so the missionary department enabled me to talk to the mission president. And then I went down and met him. And he suddenly was like, oh, my gosh, yes, I see this as a good thing, not a bad thing. This is a way for Sam to let his true feelings out as to what's happening, which will make him a healthier and better missionary.
And is that what happened?
That's definitely what happened. Sam turned into the most – one of the most extraordinary missionaries I've ever seen. And
you're not a member of the church. You saw him before and after this experience. I mean, these are really molding and shaping experiences for the young people, both young men and young women of our church. What was your impression of this mission experience?
Well, I'm a born-again Christian. And yet I've had Mormons in my life my entire life. It's funny, the number of Mormons that are in my life before I even married a Mormon. Some of my best friends in high school were Mormons. I think it's because we basically shared the same standards and we all loved Jesus. You know, I think it was kind of that simple.
Sure.
And sure, there was a few cultural differences and such. But all that said, I definitely had the view that I think the grand majority of non-Mormons have, and that is a sort of slightly suspicious view of these very straight young men in these suits walking door to door. You know, and you're like, what are they doing? And actually, probably the best description of how of the education the film brought me can be told by my neighbor. Who watched the very first cut of the film. And he's a humanist. He's not even religious. And he has spent the last 4 years traveling the world on his sailboat, sailing. And he said, Rick, I have seen these guys all over the world. I've always thought
they're elders.
The elders.
And sisters, yeah.
Yeah. And I've always thought that they were programmed, that they were there because their parents forced them to be there. And now I have seen something totally different. I have seen that these are just normal boys that have a real heart for what they believe, that are just going around doing good. You have changed my view. And so my experience was his over a long period of time. I went down and I discovered the mission was only partly about spreading the message. In fact, it was at least 50% about turning boys into men and girls into women. And you know what's so beautiful about that, and I've become a big fan of missions, is that every successful society in history has had a sort of coming of age process that people go through. It's a very anthropological thing. Most of America has given that up. We give our children over to the world to educate them how to become men and women. But the church has this sort of process by which boys become men and girls become women. And I think I really admire it. It's a beautiful thing.
It really changed his life. But that was evident to me, whether you were Mormon or not Mormon, that you saw such a metamorphosis in a relatively short time in this young man.
Absolutely, because you are thrown into the fire.
That earthquake was hugely challenging. And like you said, hard for his family at this end because they didn't hear from him. I mean, the mother in one part of the film, and I'm not giving anything away, but the mother's not sure he made it through the earthquake.
None of us were. And I'll tell you, that really tested me as a filmmaker.
Tell me about that.
Well, if I was like a really good filmmaker, I'd be over there with a camera filming the family. I couldn't do it. He's my nephew. I love him. I just couldn't do it. I was just praying. I just prayed. I didn't cover any of that with a camera. Everything you get there is post. You know, I
Well, and it's in his words, which really makes it powerful, too. It's his pictures.
Well, what was funny was that, like, the camera during the earthquake fell off his top shelf and broke. But it worked just enough for him 4 days later when he got power back on to record these extremely raw, you know, comments and observations about the madness that was happening around him. There was an entire sequence where the town that they were in, there was a rumor started that a group of convicts that had broken out of this shattered prison were on their way to take over the town and seize the food and things like this. And I mean, one story after another. And he was deeply challenged by it. But I, as an uncle, I didn't have it in me to cover it as a filmmaker would. It was very tough.
So you did get to go down to Chile one time.
Twice. Yeah, at the beginning and the end of the mission.
Okay. And then you kind of telegraph a little bit about going to the next spot. We won't see that in this, but tell us about following Luke then.
Luke is extraordinary. Luke goes into everything, as people that will see in the documentary, with a bring it on attitude. That's how he went after the BYU football team. That's how he's gone through everything in life. And
it's a second child thing, don't you think? You're always trying to keep up with that first child. Bring it on.
Yeah. And it's also the evidence of a very well-loved child, somebody that knows that people have his back. And so he got sent to Cambodia and is this huge, handsome blonde kid among people that I think their average height is 5'3" or something like this.
And look completely different than a
completely
very
different.
Blonde and fair.
And just going over there, and when I arrived, it was they had the worst floods in 40 years. And so we were knee deep, sometimes waist deep, in water going out to his investigators. You know, me with my camera, I felt like National Geographic.
I
felt really cool, you know. And so it was an extraordinary experience where he is doing great work over there, but going through a similar set of issues that Sam did, not in the same way.
And, of course, two different brothers bring two different experiences to their mission. So
it also led to something amazing. And this is an LDS lady who has been helping me with this. She heard that I was going to Cambodia to cover Luke, and she said, would you possibly be willing to bring the 5,000 Days Project to a couple orphanages in Cambodia? You know, these kids have been through the worst possible things you can imagine. And she said they have no social services, and we think that by taking these kids through these questions, you'll really, really help them. And so as a result of Luke being there, we are now have 12 Cambodian orphans at two different orphanages involved in the 5,000 Days Project.
And who's doing the shooting and kind of keeping it up?
I would go back every year.
Oh, you're doing it.
And do it, yes.
So you've added those.
Yeah.
So you get this great footage from Cambodia. Are you going to just add that on to the end of the film? Are you going to make a sequel? How are we going to see that?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, you
know.
Can hardly tantalize us with, and then I follow the second brother, and then we got to see it, right?
Oh, and there's just, I mean, his letters home are so rich, and he's keeping video diary. And I don't know yet. I just promise I'll get it out there somehow. I just don't know.
All right. There's a teaser for you.
Stay in touch with 5000daysproject.com. We'll figure it out there.
Okay. Now, you said that you knew Mormons and Mormons were in your life a lot, but you're a born-again Christian. You're not a member of our church. So you really have a unique outside perspective and yet have some working knowledge because you've been around it. So culturally, it's not completely different to you. What did you learn about the church institutionally and the membership of the church and even cultural things? What are the takeaways for you about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
Two things initially. First, just how much believers have in common. And this focus on the differences versus the similarities, I don't think Jesus wants us focusing on that. I think he wants us focusing on loving people And I don't know what it is about people that try to draw these lines, especially fellow Christians. What is that? I mean, last I read, you know, Heavenly Father did not put us in the position of Judge Judy. So, you know, it's not up to us anyway. It's not our concern. And so I've obviously come to terms with this with my family and my marriage and just focusing on our similarities versus our differences. The second thing is I think my respect for the church has grown. For a long time, I've obviously said, here's the church of the family. You know, they really focus on families. But I've learned that that comes with some real serious focus and work. There's high expectations on families in this church, and a lot of time is put in to making sure families work. And that's not necessarily true outside the church. And so I think that other people, whether it be other Christians or non-believers, have a lot to learn from. You need to have high expectations, and you need to put work into things that you value. And if I look at all of my 5,000 days kits, the 200 that I have now, almost to a person, the people that have two parents have less issues than the people that don't. That is not to pass any judgment on anything, because there's extraordinary single parents out
Absolutely.
There that are doing incredible things. But
probably have to work a little harder.
But that's just
the
it.
Same
that's
result.
Exactly my point. They have to work harder as mm-hmm. a result. And so the family is the center of almost every 5,000 day story.
So what your family looked like, how it interacted, and how that affected you in your path.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
You know, talking about the family just very quickly, I was struck as a mother that the mother and the father, they're in video. You see them, you know, at the school, or you see them in the home a little bit, but they're very peripheral to your story. Was that intentional?
It was intentional. I mean, this story is, and the 5,000 Days Project is about giving children their own voice. And so I try to keep adults mm-hmm. out of it as much as possible. And plus, Paul and Julie, they're very LDS in that they don't want to bring attention to themselves. They're very modest people. Mm-hmm. And so I just felt honored that they'd be in it at all, quite
You
frankly.
Said earlier in this interview that they have – that Sam and Luke have these extraordinary parents. But are we to just glean that from watching? Because it's not necessarily evident. And yet I said to my husband when we were watching it, I said, they're at everything.
Yes.
You know, that was about the only thing I could tell you. You didn't really see an interaction between parent and child and things like that.
I would have loved to capture that, but that's another story.
Totally.
Quite frankly, the evidence is in the children. And Luke and Sam have two younger brothers who are equally as extraordinary, Tommy and Joseph.
And are they part of your project
they
as well?
Are. They are.
It must be an interesting perspective as someone who is related through marriage to get in a room without parents and really get to know these. I mean, you really strip down to the feelings of their heart.
Yeah.
And do you feel like they hold back?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a child should only share what they want to share. I don't force them to share anything, but they are rewarded personally when they share more mm-hmm. because if you got something inside of you, you got to get it out. And I will say something that – and I don't think this is just specific to LDS kids, maybe religious children in general, but there is a desire to try to appear perfect. And I use the word appear because none of us are Jesus. We aren't perfect. So we have to try to appear perfect. And in doing so, we build up a sort of these walls that hold the sickness within us. And by sickness, I mean things that happen to us just as a normal course of life that need to be discussed. Concerns, temptations, influences, that the more that you talk about them, the more that you get them out of you, the more that they lose influence over you, the more that they lose power over you. I have some beautiful stories that show that very specific thing.
Mm. Tell me about the response to this specific film, Two Brothers. It's been tremendous.
It has been overwhelming.
Which is a good thing for a filmmaker.
Absolutely. I don't think my work has ever received so many positive comments. It's always you know, on both sides of the spectrum. But
you've enabled people who are highly interested in this type of project to kind of join in a way, in an ancillary sort of way.
Absolutely, and in fact, I get several emails a day with people saying, "I have kids."
Yeah.
And bless them, you know, they all want to be a part of the project. And what it's done is it's led us to develop something that's sort of called My Video Diary. And it's a do-it-yourself kit where they will be able to go to a website and get the questions, be asked, physically asked on screen by me, the 5,000 days questions, press a button, and all their stuff is stored safely for their future.
So do they ask the same questions year by year and get different answers to the same questions?
Yeah, but it's also age appropriate. But we've received requests not only to do this on a 5,000 days level, but we've received requests to do this with married couples, to chart a married couple's development. We have something called Wisdom of the Aged for older people. I mean, my father passed 2 years ago, and I'm a filmmaker, and I did not get an interview with him.
Mm.
What am I doing? You know, and so those things are so valuable. So family history. We even have a beautiful one called Voice from Heaven, which is if you want to leave a message to your future grandchildren or great-grandchildren, you can do it. And this whole thing called My Video Diary is still about 7 weeks from completion, but they can go sign up to be informed about it on the website today.
Okay. You have so many great stories still coming down the pipeline, you know, and I'm just curious, what's next? You've had the two brothers.
What's next is really the series, the Listen series on BYUB. I'm so enthusiastic about that. And we have
– Do you pull your stories that you've been working on for the last decade for this Listen series on BYU Broadcasting?
Absolutely.
Okay, so they're your people already.
Absolutely. These are all kids that I've been covering for between 5 and 10 years. And we've pulled their stories together, and that'll be about a 15-minute version of their story.
15 per story?
Per story.
Okay.
It's a half an hour episode.
Okay.
And then – I'm really excited about this because we are about to complete what will be the second half of each program. We are bringing all of the kids together that are involved in this series who have not seen their own story and have not seen each other's stories. And we're bringing them together at a camp, and we're going to show their stories and film them around a campfire talking about their reactions and their reaction to each other's stories. So it's sort of like a real breakfast club.
So once they get past cringing at how they looked at age 8 before they had braces or whatever,
right,
then they'll really be able to see an earlier iteration of themselves.
Yes.
And that's a lot to be able to digest
This has never been done before. And we have participants from age 13. Joseph, you know, Luke and Sam's little brother is a part of it.
Okay.
Age 24.
Wow. And so future, we're not really looking at more feature-length films. We're looking at more short vignettes so you can tell the stories of more of them. What's the plan?
We have a feature-length film on Sam and Luke because BYUB gave us the money to do it. Most of the stories, you know, we don't follow in such detail that would fill out a full 80-minute film. However, we have one other thing we're working on too, and it's called the 5,000 Days Project LDS Worldwide. And we are right now developing to shoot 60 LDS kids over 10 countries over the next 10 years. And I anticipate that those will, throughout, starting about year 4, become some feature films.
So for right now, we'll look for some vignettes because you have so many stories to tell. I remember off the air you told me of this outstanding young man that took one bad turn into the world of drugs and it changed everything, which of course it would. But it was a compelling story. Will you tell his story?
Well, this boy is named Simon, and just incredibly handsome kid, was student body president of his elementary and captain of his wrestling team and played on the football team, was really bright academically, and his family imploded. And he dropped into drug use and almost died.
World fell apart.
World fell apart. And for 4 years was just hanging on by a string. Mm-hmm. And then at some point was able to be that, I guess, 8% out of 100 that pulled himself out of it and has spent the last 4 years traveling the world, going to Haiti, helping people.
Giving service.
Beautiful story.
So that's just one little tidbit of the type of stories you'll be able to tell in this project.
Yeah.
Well, we can't thank you enough. Two Brothers is a wonderful family movie. We've watched it several times at my house, actually, and we've all really loved it. We pick something different out, just like regular movies or shows. We pick something different that resonates with us each time we've watched it. So
great.
Really appreciate your skills.
It's very dense. You will find things, more and more things every time you watch it, definitely.
Okay, the 5,000 Days Project. We will certainly look forward to many more stories of these great kids for months and years to come, in fact. And I'll be watching especially for the way you finish telling Sam and Luke's story, because I definitely want to hear about his experience in Cambodia. So we'll watch for that. You're not going to get away with not telling us, right?
Okay.
Well, Rick Stevenson, it's been our absolute pleasure to have you here on the Mormon Channel. Thanks so much for dropping by.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've been listening to a special edition of Conversations on the Mormon Channel. We hope you'll join us on our next episode as we meet and get to know others with inspiring projects and stories. I'm Ruth Todd. Thanks for being with us today on Conversations.
You've been listening to a special edition of Conversations here on the Mormon Channel, a media outlet of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This interview was with Rick Stevenson, the director and producer of the documentary film Two Brothers, featuring two young Latter-day Saint brothers whose lives and changing attitudes were regularly documented over an 11-year period. Two Brothers is shown on BYU Broadcasting and is also available for purchase in DVD format. Conversations is one of many programs offered on the Mormon Channel, a media outlet of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. If you have a comment, you can contact us through our email address, mormonchannel@ldschurch.org. This and other episodes of Conversations, as well as many other programs, are available on demand or as a free download to your personal listening device. Just go to mormonchannel.org and click on Programs. We hope you've enjoyed this program. Make the Mormon Channel part of your day. Join us again for more interviews on Conversations.